Well, thank you very much. I don't know, I'm not assuming a lot of you know a great deal about these Left Behind books. There's 12 novels written really by two, and this is my text going to really more, you know, explore this with you and give you some examples from it. And the larger text it's based on is going to be published C-Theory Books, this Left Behind text right here you see in the middle, Religion, Technology, and the Flight from the Flesh. These are authored by two writers, right-wing evangelical fundamentalist, one of them the minister Tim LaHaye, who was a co-founder with Jerry Falwell of the Moral Majority. Jerry Falwell, much more known. Tim LaHaye, a decidedly political actor who moves from a relatively quiet background as a minister, largely concerned with religious issues, to really becoming a political activist. In 1979, found something called the National Policy Council, a neutral-sounding term formed by, members of this or a number of the, you could say, elite political right-wing forces in the U.S., people like Attorney General Edward Meese and the Attorney General John Ashcroft, the right-wing beer manufacturer Joseph Coors, money from the National Policy Council sponsors go to things like Oliver North when he's violating U.S. and international law and funding the Contras in Nicaragua. The U.S. Held guilty in the World Court of 24 counts of terrorism, state-sponsored terrorism against the sovereign nation of Nicaragua. U.S. didn't accept the World Court, didn't go to the World Court, didn't defend itself in the World Court because it doesn't transcend the World Court, I think. And so a lot of this is about the transcendence. 63 million copies of these novels are sold, the largest publishing project in English. And I'm in a place where many of my colleagues, like perhaps you, know very little about them. And yet they're very concerned, my colleagues that are, why, for instance, Republicans continue to win the national elections in the United States up until this November, we'll see what happens, and why so many bagged the presidency of George Bush, that is, so many really right-wing, committed evangelical Christians who share a view of the world, I think, is waiting for external supernatural interventions on the side of a nation chosen by God to represent God in history, that is the United States. So you're going to hear me talk about these novels and their general concerns with technology and their general disconcerns with the body. The only other thing I want to say as a preview for you, two things really. In studying culture and technology, it really strikes me as more important than ever, not only because of the rise of fundamentalisms, but in some sense maybe the rise of unconscious cultural domain assumptions that are deeply religious, that still govern our notions of technology and science. So we often think of technology and science as mostly a secular project, but sometimes the unexamined religiosity behind our assumptions, particularly technologies of the body, strike me as important and ought to be examined and maybe made more of the discourse of critical analysis. A second thing I just want to tell you, because I'm not going to talk about it, it is reduced talk. This is going to just expose you to some of the issues that's in this now new C-Theory electronic book. But in the book itself, talk more at length in a couple of chapters about people's actual reading practices of these books. So what do people do with these 63 million copies of the book sold so far? And there's a very good study, I think, by Amy Johnson Freikholm, where she's done some ethnography, some field work, some interviewing among readers, and she suggests important things. One, that these are a collective reading experience. These books aren't just read as individual consumers on your nightstand. For the most part, they lead into reading groups, discussion groups, Bible study groups, studies of the Book of Revelations, and textual analysis in a Christian sense of these novels and their thrills and their fascinations. She also concludes that reading these novels allow people to visualize both the Bible better or in a more restrictive way. You'll say, I don't think it's any way to read the Bible, but this is a very particular reading of the Bible, but also allows them to interpret world historical events. In these books, though you'll only get a glimpse of this in my text today, are full of all kinds of political scenarios that are very close to the actual place in which we are. References in the book to the rebuilding of Babylon in Iraq, and the resituating of the United Nations headquarters to Babylon in Iraq, and the concern with the United Nations is really a source of evil, as opposed to a place of potential world reconciliation or world justice. But these are parts of and so these things are themes in the novel, and the novels help people to read the contemporary events. So when you hear of the earthquakes here or there, or the tsunamis, or all these things are previewed in the book as stuff that's right at the edge of our history, and people actually use these books, the Left Behind novels, the 12 of them, to interpret contemporary history. The last thing is they also become an occasion for really witnessing. People who read these books self-consciously read them in public, read them in cafes, hold them up when they're on public transportation. So if you see people with these books, because I was doing this when I was reading them, and I didn't mean to be witnessing to their message, but I suppose indirectly I could have. So my paper, Technologies of the Apocalypse, The Left Behind Novels, and Flight from the Flesh. Preface, One Nation Under God. The United States of America is history's first formally secular republic. The U.S. Constitution guarantees a legal separation between church and state. This is one reason why America has long been viewed as a beacon for many of modern enlightenment, democratic governance, and scientific rationality. This is the sober, pragmatic America envisioned by the nation's founding fathers, most of whom were deists. This is an America governed by a self-evident right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is also the America of the Protestant ethic described by Max Weber, an America that believed that, quote, the rational and utilitarian uses of wealth were willed by God for the needs of both the individual and the community. In this America, enlightenment and religion stroll as cordial companions, each complementing the existence of the other. But this is only one side of a decidedly Janus-faced religious America. Since its inception, another powerful and far less rational religious spirit has split the nation's attention, bifurcating America's vision of itself and its place in world history. The second American religious spirit is the intense, emotionally charged, and judgmental Christian spirit of a nation believing itself to be divinely ordained agent of God's kingdom on earth. This is an apocalyptic religious spirit, a harbinger of God's imminent intervention into the course of human history. From the time of the American Revolution to the present, when political leaders evoke this second spirit to praise the virtues of freedom and liberty, they use terms that are saturated with religious meaning. This is to speak of freedom in ways that transcend the human rights and democratic principles enshrined in the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. Here, freedom is drenched in biblical connotations and in blood, an offspring of grace and the unerring authority of the gospel. This suggests a special kind of freedom, not simply freedom from tyrannical rule and unjust authority, but freedom found in the joy of conversion, in a liberation from the pain and sorrow of normal bodily life. Early in American history, this explicitly religious imagination of freedom became coupled with a righteous theology of hatred. This theology marched hand in hand with the ritualized demonizing of the country's enemies. Indeed, from King George to Saddam Hussein, one American enemy after another has been portrayed as being in league with the devil or bearing the marks of the beast, a prophetic sign of the dreaded Antichrist depicted in the book of Revelation. Pitted against these satanic adversaries, the second side of the American religious spirit conjures up an image of the United States as a nation chosen by God to champion the cause of good in the cosmic eschatological battle with the forces of evil. Ebbing and flowing as a force in history, the passionate second side of the American religious imagination exerted greatest effort and influence in the U.S. politics during around the mid-19th century, and then again in the early 20th century, and then again now, in the early 21st century, the righteous Christian warrior ethos being associated with the second American spirit in the born-again religious political rhetoric of George Bush, our current president. Bush's many veiled, themed references to God's mission for America in spreading freedom across the globe and fighting evil at home and abroad have stirred millions of people to view his presidency in starkly religious terms. My mother included. Not far from this. My mother just feels that, you know, Bush is obviously such a man of God. They're really an immoral and truthful individual, that how could you not support him? Other evidence comes from Hardy Billington of Poplar Bluff, Missouri. With his friend and the fundamentalist preacher David Hahn, Billington circulated a petition that gathered 10,000 signatures inviting President Bush to make a 2004 campaign stop to their town. When word reached the White House about the petition, plans were actually made for George W. Bush to travel to Poplar Bluff. Following the president's speech to a crowd of 20,000, Billington declared, quote, "To me, I just believe God controls everything, and God uses the president to keep evil down, to see darkness and to protect this great nation. Other people will not protect us. God gives people choices to make. God gave us this president to be the man to protect our nation at this time." The religious aura surrounding President Bush and the righteous anger of his supporters surprised many of Bush's political opponents following the 2004 elections. Out of touch with the fateful second spirit of American religious culture, at least out of conscious touch, and viewing politics in more rational and so-called reality-based terms, many otherwise thoughtful critics found themselves hard-pressed to explain Bush's populist appeal. This is not entirely surprising. For the most part, the social biographies and religious trajectories of those who most opposed Bush in the U.S. set them aside from the everyday worlds of conservative white evangelicals. In addition, when Protestant, Bush's critics are far more likely to come from the shrinking mainstream Protestant denominations or from African American or African diasporic churches than be members of fundamentalist evangelical church communities. Isolated on the supposedly more rational side of Americans' religious social divide, many liberal or left-leaning critics are either really unfamiliar with or relatively inattentive to a great deal of what's been going on among fervent members of the Christian right in America. One thing that has been going on among fervent members of the Christian right in America is the so-called left behind phenomenon. The publication and mass consumption of the best-selling Left Behind novels authored by the writers and activists Tim LaHaye and Jerry P. Jenkins. Although marketed beneath the radar of most secular readers, the Left Behind series has already sold in the vicinity of an astounding 63 million copies in print. This represents an unprecedented, enormously influential conservative Christian intervention into contemporary American popular culture. This essay explores the social genesis and the impact of the Left Behind books, the social technologies they deploy, and their accompanying media offshoots. In so doing, I hope to shed modest light on key elements of the religious imagination mobilized for political purposes by supporters of George W. Bush and Republican Party organizers. The Left Behind books appear at a fateful moment in history, a time in which the future of humankind is marked not only by the promises and anxieties of far-reaching global and social technological change, but also widespread personal and spiritual insecurities stemming from the vast global restructuring and amplified social inequality. The soul-shattering anxieties of this age are for many people magnified by unprecedented waves of immigration across the globe, the omnipresent threat of brutal terrorism and preemptive warfare, a rapid breakdown in traditional forms of family life and gender roles, and the penetration of the market into nearly innermost sanctums of everyday life. Within or against, or perhaps simply to make mythic meaning of this troubled historical landscape, the Left Behind novels have captured millions upon millions of readers with an apocalyptic prophetic tale of biblical end times and the vengeful second coming of Jesus Christ. Like a heat-seeking rocket targeting the vicissitudes of the flesh, the Left Behind phenomenon is a vibrant talisman of a worldview channeling important aspects of America's dominant religious imagination of itself. Signs depicting the fears and fascinations of a bold new world order of ultra-modern culture and power are on display everywhere in the Left Behind books, from tales of terrorism and war in the Middle East to paranoid imaginations of mass death, total governmental control, and omnipresent technological surveillance. Stories of mesmeric manipulation by the electronic media, one world corporate economic domination, reconfigurations of gender and sexuality, and struggles to save one's mortal soul are also woven into the novels that compose the 12-volume Left Behind series.
To enter the world of Left Behind is to move perilously within the enchanted psychogeography of America's dark, irrational second side. To read Left Behind is also to risk coming face to face with the violence of America's own homegrown version of anti-modern extremism. Confronting the dangerous shadow side of American religious experience and practice, this is neither pleasant nor easy. It is something I think, however, the critical scholars need to do to undertake this challenge, if only to put the brakes on a wide range of religiously fueled technologies of exploitative empire building, new global technologies of power that march zealously under the banner of God Bless America. I hope in engaging with this talk, this essay, that you join me in this task. Section 1, At the End of Time. At the end of time, Rayford was born again. Alleluia! This was the end of time, laced with uncertainties and worry. The end of time marked by anxieties of the flesh. This was also the advent of a new time. Time that was crystal clear and predestined. Time that followed a tightly scriptured path. Rayford settled in front of the television and popped in a video. Hello, came the pleasant voice from the pastor Rayford had met several times. My name is Vernon Billings. I'm pastor of New Hope Village Church of Mount Prospect, Illinois. As you watch this tape, I can only imagine the fear and despair you face, for this has been recorded for viewing only after the disappearance of God's people from Earth. That you are watching it all indicates that you have been left behind. You are no doubt stunned, shocked, afraid, remorseful. I would like you to consider what I have to say on this tape as instructions for life following Christ's rapture of his true church. That has happened. Anyone you know or knew who has placed his or her trust in Jesus Christ alone for salvation has now been taken to heaven. The man left behind with his television, videotape, and VCR is Rayford Steele, a central character in the Left Behind novels, perhaps the most successful publishing venture of all times. Rayford's an airplane pilot. In the opening pages of the first novel, Left Behind, he's piloting a fully loaded 747 from Chicago to London, but the pilot's mind is elsewhere. Rayford's mind is on the, quote, drop-dead gorgeous flight senior flight attendant, Hattie Durham, a woman he has never touched. Rayford is, however, thinking about touching Hattie, imagining the flames of an impassioned affair. Maybe today, maybe this morning, if her coded tap on the door didn't arouse the first officer. Such thoughts were new to Rayford Steele, the captain. He used to look forward to getting home to his wife. Irene was attractive and vivacious enough even at 40. But lately he had found himself repelled by her obsession with religion. It was all she could talk about. It was not that Rayford was against religion. God was okay with him, and he even occasionally enjoyed church. But since Irene had hooked up with a smaller congregation, it was into weekly Bible study and church every Sunday, Rayford had become uncomfortable. What happens next makes him even more uncomfortable. Not sure whether he'd follow through with anything overt, Captain Rayford Steele felt an irresistible urge to see Hattie Durham right then. He opens the cockpit door. Hattie is there and pulls him toward her. But it's not romance that greets Rayford. It is something far more amazing. The attractive senior flight attendant is clearly terrified. She informs her captain that dozens of people have suddenly disappeared throughout the cabin. Not only that, where once the missing passengers sat buckled to their seats, there was now only rumpled piles of clothing. Eyeglasses, jewelry, contact lenses, hearing aids, pacemakers, dentures, dental fillings, shoes, even surgical pins. The 12 novels in the apocalyptic Left Behind series begin with a depiction of the rapture. In the twinkling of an eye, believers the world over, people who genuinely accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior, are suddenly transported into heaven. Also caught up in the air to meet the Lord, are all children under the age of 12. Even fetuses disappear mysteriously from pregnant women's wombs. CNN repeatedly shows slow-motion footage of a woman's belly going from roundly pregnant to nearly flat. Cars crash, planes collide as operators dematerialize. People vaporize in the workplace. Others disappear before the eyes of family members or friends. A groom is snatched up while placing the ring on the finger of his beloved in Australia. Nearly everyone vanishes from a memorial service at a funeral home, including the corpse. The world plunges into chaos, but for those left behind, this is all just beginning. This is also the beginning for the mass market of readers who have purchased more than the 63 million Left Behind novels. While the first several volumes had initial print runs of 150,000 to 200,000, The Indwelling, the series' seventh book, and then all subsequent books on through 12, rose to the top of the bestseller lists compiled by the New York Times, Publishers Weekly, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today. By 2001, the novels topped all sales at Barnes & Noble's, Walmart, and Target. Even more remarkable, Tyndale House, the publisher of the books, says that one-third of the novels were sold to Christian bookstores or in Christian congregations that wouldn't even be counted on these other best-selling lists and so forth. Left Behind series also includes prequels. There's a prequel and a sequel. There's also DVDs, films, three movies so far, graphic comic novels, a video game, a 22-part children's version of the story, which is pretty wild. It's children that sort of directly are connected to the main adult story, but to tell their own version of how they're out there in the 7 years of Left Behind. Overall, 1 in 8 Americans have read the books, and they are said by those who do these studies that they're a favorite among the U.S. troops in Iraq. The blockbuster popularity of these books is a big event in several realms: literature, consumer culture, and religion. And what I'm saying today and in this essay, I want to make it eventful in another realm as well. This is the realm of global techno power. The Left Behind books really read like fast-paced religious techno thrillers. According to the New York Times, the series, quotes, combines Tom Clancy-like suspense with touches of romance, high-tech flash, and many biblical references. Weaving together throughout the novel's interrelated plots, this apocalyptic story of the globe and so forth in the years of this tribulation, the years of Left Behind, there's many numerous sermons and prayers, discussion of arcane biblical passages. So in one scene you're in this kind of high-tech action scene, the next one you're really having this kind of digest, you know, this discussion of Bible. It's quite wild. The books are also jam-packed with images of technology. The Left Behind novels are inspired by Dr. Tim LaHaye's reading of prophetic biblical texts. The theology articulated by LaHaye is known by several names: dispensationalism, dispensational premillennialism, or premillennial dispensationalism. Throughout the text, I'll probably mostly call it dispensationalism. Dispensationalist theology was made popular by the late 19th century Irish evangelical John Nelson Darby. Darby lived between 1800 and 1882. I tell much more about Darby in the larger text, and particularly his journeys to the United States, where he became particularly popular in the years during and just after the American War between the States, the Civil War. As Tim LaHaye points out, Darby did more than any other man to organize and popularize the dispensational viewpoint in both the U.S. and Great Britain. Concerned with events surrounding the second coming of Christ, several premillennial events are particularly important to dispensationalism. One, the rapture, in which God's true church is lifted into heaven. Two, the return of Jews to their biblical homeland in Israel. This actually happened in 1948, and of course is one of the reasons why Palestinians are wondering what happened to their homeland. Three, seven years of catastrophic tribulation under the rule of the Antichrist, and four, the final glorious appearing, which is really Jesus' second coming, which will happen after 7 years of tribulation. When Christ returns, he promptly vanquishes the Antichrist in a battle of Armageddon, which is also one of the titles of the book, thus beginning the millennium, a 1,000-year period of peace during which Christ will reign on earth. Things will be peaceful, things will be great till the end of the 1,000 years, where Satan finally returns and makes a big uprising, and then he's defeated by Christ, and that's really the end of time. All these things are talked about in the novels. The central plot in the novel involves a prolonged struggle between the Antichrist and the tribulation force. As a biblical figure, the Antichrist rules the earth for 7 years between the rapture and the glorious appearing, Jesus' second coming. The evil rule of the Antichrist is contested by the tribulation force, a heroic band of believers who operate out of New Hope Village Church in a suburb of Chicago. This was Irene Steele's church before she was taken up into heaven, leaving her husband, Rayford, behind. Associate Pastor Bruce Barnes operates as the Tribulation Force theological guide and spiritual leader. Before the rapture, Bruce's faith had been really more phony than real. But after witnessing so many people's disappearance, Bruce immerses himself in the study of biblical prophecy, testifying to his parishioners, quote, "There's no doubt in my mind that we have witnessed the rapture. Jesus Christ has returned for his true family, and the rest of us were left behind." Inspired by Bruce's teaching, Rayford Steele, Rayford's daughter Chloe, a former college student at Stanford, she leaves Stanford to join forces with the Tribulation Force and really take up what's more important than going to college. And Cameron Buck Williams, a renowned journalist and the senior writer at Global Weekly, the world's most influential newspaper, constitute the core member of this Tribulation Force. Nicolae Carpathia, the Antichrist, reigns over technologically most regime in history. The courageous Tribulation Force parasites off Carpathia's technological empire, deploying a wide array of high-tech devices, computers, cell phones, televisions, video cassettes, the internet, ready for anything, SUVs, state-of-the-art jet airplanes, surveillance devices, and the latest kinds of all kinds of digital gadgetry to combat the seductive allure of the Antichrist and his dreaded what's called beast system, the beast being a term for the Antichrist that emerges in the book of Apocalypse or Revelations. It's a new form of social control in these books. In depicting social technology as a resource for combative believers, the Left Behind series departs from existing conventions in fundamentalist thought and what was previously a series of rapture fiction. There's other short stories and rapture stories and so forth in the early 20th century. Most of these works portray technology as simply the devil's work. Get away from technology. But in these books, something very different. The rebellious Tribulation Force is in a paradoxical situation of trying to use the Antichrist technology against him. The series' Christian heroes are keenly aware that the omnipresent technologies of televisual enchantment and surveillance are dangerous weapons in the Antichrist arsenal of power. Nevertheless, to resist him, they use his own tools. They borrow on the bandwidth. They play on borrowed time. Although the Antichrist deploys a demonic mixture of technology and false religious rhetoric to control people the globe over, for those battling on the side of God, technology becomes an instrument of redemption and a weapon against evil. This is evident in the following exchange that takes place between the journalist Cameron Buck Williams and Donnie Moore, a techno whiz kid, a committed Christian who works for the Tribulation Force. Donnie, Buck said gravely, "You have an opportunity here to do something great for God." "I don't want to take any profit off something that will help the church and God," said Donnie. "Fine, whatever profit you build or don't build, that's up to you. I'm just telling you I need 5 absolute best top-of-the-line computers, small, compact as they can be, with as much power and memory and speed and communication ability as you can wire into them." "Hey, you're talking my language, Mr. Williams." "I hope so, Donnie, because I want a computer with virtually no limits. You hear that? No limits. I want to be able to take it anywhere, keep it reasonably concealed, store everything I want on it, and be able to contact and connect with anybody anywhere at any time. Is that doable, Donnie?" "Well, sir, I can put together something for you like those computers that scientists use in the jungle or in the desert when there's no place to plug in or hook up to. I can add another feature, too." "What's that?" "Video conferencing." Kind of like, I guess, what we're doing here. "Yes. Yes, you mean I can talk with people and see them while I'm talking? Yes, you can do that if they have the same kind of machine. I want it all, Donnie, and I want it fast. And I want you to keep this confidential." The Left Behind books and the historical social phantasms that are symptomatic of dominant, I think they're symptomatic, really, of the dominant material and imaginary technologies driving technological enactments of power on a vast global scale. These tendencies are shared by many of America and the world's leading social institutions and leaders. If for no other reason than this, the books and their consumption demand the serious critical attention. But for those of you who have little knowledge or know little about the Left Behind phenomenon, now this may seem like a grand or a little bit overblown statement, Yet despite their, because really despite their success, these books have really been below the radar of most scholars of culture and technology, history and power. The astounding sales figures for the Left Behind books, however, may be less surprising for those who have an eye on the religious belief of contemporary U.S. citizens. So listen to some of this data.